This is Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. I'm Professor Jules Pretty.
And I'm journalist Martha Dixon. This episode is all about nature as therapy.
I believe the wilderness has the power to heal broken lives, broken minds.
The healing power of nature, how scientists are using the great outdoors to treat mental illness.
Green exercise and nature therapy have been hitting the news lately.
They are terms that have begun to appear in public health policy in the UK over the last decade or so.
If you imagine a highly anxious child who doesn't feel able to cope well in life, but they've actually climbed a tree that they didn't think they could try, you can then actually weave an incredible narrative with them about what their capability is.
But the healing power of nature isn't new.
We know that nature is good for health. The ancient Greeks had over 400 temples for outdoor healing.
So how can we show today that nature is good therapy for all sorts of people?
Can it and will it replace some uses of pharmaceuticals?
In this episode, we explore how University of Essex academics are providing the evidence to help in the better use of what we might call the natural health service.
We would love to influence government policy at a national level so that we are providing these opportunities for young people with investments in these nature-based programs from a very early age, so that not only can we help those people, but more importantly, we can prevent people going down routes where it ends up costing society and themselves a lot of money.
And how a University of Essex idea about angling has led to a new European-wide initiative on mental health.
We knew from personal experience, really, how relaxing and how kind of de-stressing being out in nature, sitting at the side of a lake and trying to catch a few fish can be.
When Mum passed away, we like all broke up. Different foster carers, different places. Dad gone away, never came back.
I think just being out here, away from everything, like it takes your mind off everything.
Skinny, bring you a cup of tea?
No, I'm okay.
These youngsters are out camping on a hill. It's a trip run by the Wilderness Foundation.
The charity takes troubled youngsters and puts them out in nature.
Chief Executive Joe Roberts says it allows people to lift themselves out of a hole.
We can actually work with the tools and wonders of the natural world to really enable people to strengthen themselves, again, to become sustainable and healthy, and to have a future that's worth living.
I was homeless for like 2-3 years. I was having trouble with my mental illness. Like, your mind just clears. Like, you don't think, you don't even have to think.
I have OCD and I haven't thought about that since. Completely out of my mind for me, definitely.
We've got around 30 therapists who are trained and skilled at working outdoors in a really creative way with children and adolescents and adults. And then we've got our education team who work outside with young people, really teaching and giving them that kind of engagement and love of nature and how to look after it.
It's not hard to see why nature makes sense as a therapy, but can we prove it works to stop people ending up in care or in prison?
The University of Essex wanted to do just that.
Academics have been following the Wilderness Foundation and its youngsters for over a decade. Here's Dr. Joe Barton.
So we've worked with a number of young people looking at how the environment and spending time outdoors can improve different mental health measures. So we tend to measure this using standardised questionnaires, and we track this over time. So we get a baseline measure of how they perceive themselves, their self-esteem, their mood, their hopefulness. And then we measure that at various periods of time over the programme when they're involved in outdoor based based interventions and see how this improves over time. And what we really find that's interesting is that, for example, with self-esteem, not only do we see an initial improvement when they join the programme and they have their first wilderness experience outdoors, but actually we're shifting the threshold. So 9 months later, their self-esteem is in a much better place than where they started. I think just being outside and being away from the chaos of their lives at home and the negative influences enables them the opportunity to be reflective and really think about themselves and who they want to be and where they see themselves in the future. So we get them to really sort of draw shields to see how they see themselves and how they think others see them and how they want to be seen. And the way they verbalise that, and then we ask them to do that again at the end of the programme, we can really see that shift in how they see themselves and how they actually start to respect themselves and value themselves and believe that others see them in a much more positive light.
Over half of the world's population now lives in towns and cities. Joe from the Wilderness Foundation says this urban living, distant from nature, coupled with different parenting styles, has led to a shift in how kids are growing up.
I'm really interested in the whole thing about adventure and play and how that actually helps children build their resilience. So we have, you know, and I mean, I don't want to be cliched, but we are looking at some of the issues around overprotection in our modern world. You know, when I was a child, I was completely sort of probably quite abandoned, but my whole world was around playing outside in nature, climbing trees, building dens, actually being quite risky. And what we're seeing today is a lot of children are not taking risk. The anxiety is projected out from them, often from family, from teachers, from friends, which make everything risk averse. And you often hear people saying, be careful, don't do that, be careful. And actually the only way that a child can develop an inner understanding of what their capability is to try and then to see how it goes and to learn from that. Obviously, as an adult, you've got to be careful and cautious if you're in charge of a child, that you don't willingly let them run into the middle of the road or you let them climb a tree that's so high they can break their neck, but to enable them to explore their own boundaries in as measured way as possible, but giving them freedom. So we're very, very keen on, in a safe and sensible way, allowing children to explore their boundaries, to find their space, to find their capability. And I think if we as adults look back at our biggest learning curves, the things that gave us the biggest boost of our self-confidence and self-awareness, it's usually when we've taken on something harder than we thought. And we've either had to learn because we failed, and that's not failure, or we've had to have something joyous and wonderful in terms of our confidence because we succeeded. And it's all experiential. So we're very keen on this idea of connecting people from a heart base, not just the rational thinking process, but what does it feel like? And then actually giving them the tools to be able to learn and use that in a kind of not a fixed mindset, but a growth mindset.
Have a chat to the chickens here. How are you doing, Barry?
I'm all right, thank you.
Matt King runs Growing Together, a charity based in Essex that's all about digging and growing in community gardens. He loves chatting to those who come.
What do you like about coming here?
I love all the staff.
I love all the friends here.
You make lots of friends here?
Yes, friends here. The staff is very nice too.
Staff are nice?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
But my favourite thing is my babies, my little chickens, but unfortunately I can't do it at the moment.
No, because of bird flu.
Yeah. But unfortunately, when they get all better, I can clean them, wash them, do what I have to do.
So what, before you came here, what were you experiencing?
I was a bad boy when I came here. I'd be a bad drinker. Very bad. Then all the staff, Because I come in once, so I said, I could do this. I've not come here, and I've been here since.
How did it make you feel when you were drinking?
Very bad.
Yeah, depression.
Yeah. I get that. I still get it sometimes, but not all the time. Yeah, but I'll get by.
What difference does it make coming to somewhere like this to growing together?
It's going to get me better and more. Speak to new people. Speak to the staff. Well, I sit down and listen to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we run a whole range of different support services for people with anxiety, depression, more severe and enduring mental illnesses, and help people in their journey to recovery and well-being. I think it's really important the mental health services complement one another. I think medicine has its place and therapy has its place, but it's also really important to have social support, peer support, and that sort of hope, opportunity and control that come with positive activities, being with other people and giving people a sense of purpose and a sense of well-being. I think medicine and that sort of clinical services are really important, but unless you have that broader aspect of recovery, it can be really, really tough for people.
Seems to need a lot of work again, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's quite difficult because it's quite intense area of the garden in terms of the planting and the weeds and stuff. So.
Well, yeah, I had a late Asperger's diagnosis in 2009, so I was really not socialising going out. I was very not confident at all. Just really struggling to really get on and about, really. And the big one, probably looking back, was I really didn't know what to do with myself. So, yeah, so I just started coming here to support my sort of well-being, my recovery, and do something physical. And yeah, and out of it, I found a big passion for horticulture.
So it's built your confidence?
Oh, big time, yeah. I think I probably didn't realise how confident I could be in life before, without gardening.
Over the last 10 years, we've seen a massive growth in increase in mental health and well-being, mental health support. We've now got funding from the NHS, which I'm really pleased to be working in partnership with the NHS to run the Recovery College, to run the Wellbeing Hub, and to provide positive activities for people. Services like the Growing Together Project, the Therapeutic Community Gardens, tend to be harder to fund from statutory sources. So we really have to go out to the grant-making trusts and foundations, to the general public, to other people to support that. And the evidence base is definitely building, the evidence base is there, but convincing people that therapeutic gardening, being outdoors, working with nature, and giving people that sort of sense of opportunity and control by being in a community garden setting, just, you know, it's quite a big leap for people in the NHS to see that that's, you know, that's an important thing to be funded, and that's a way out when it's a very different alternative to clinical services, to medicine.
The University of Essex is now taking its proven research to push for public funding for therapy like Growing Together. Here's Jo Barton again.
Collectively, there's so many examples of good practice going on across the country that from a research perspective, what we want to do is enable some consistency in how we measure these changes in these young people so we can increase the evidence that can then influence the policymakers to invest in these young people, in these types of programmes that are preventative rather than necessarily just therapeutic, to really make sure we're meeting their needs as young as possible. We are starting to see a shift from sort of local council perspective, government funding, thinking that, you know, this could be a new blueprint for how we support young people. And actually, when we start to look at the monetary value, which unfortunately the reality is that money still talks, the cost of these types of programmes compared to the cost of being in a young offenders institute, for example, in the long term, it's much more cost effective, as well as, most importantly, being a lot more beneficial for the young people themselves. We would love to influence government policy at a national level so that we are providing these opportunities for young people with investments in these nature-based programs from a very early age, so that not only can we help those people when they do experience difficulties in their lives, but more importantly, we can prevent people going down routes where it ends up costing society and themselves a lot of money.
We know that nature is good for us, whether we are outside or in. Patients in hospital wards that have green views recover more quickly. Hospices and cancer centres are already very good at this kind of green design.
We've also heard on this podcast that UK health systems are now ready to use nature as an official form of treatment.
Now we've added one more layer to this.
Angling as therapy.
So, I'm Nick Cooper, and I'm a senior lecturer at the University of Essex in the psychology department. So, we've done some research looking at the effects of being out in nature on military veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. And we were particularly interested in looking at the benefits of angling, which sounds a bit of a weird thing to be looking at, but we knew from personal experience, really, how relaxing and how kind of de-stressing being out in nature, sitting at the side of a lake and trying to catch a few fish can be. The military veterans we've been working with come from a wide variety of backgrounds and of all different ages. So we've had guys in their early 20s who've been serving in Afghanistan, or a bit older, some in the Gulf War, right the way up to, I think the oldest military veterans we've had were people in their early 60s who fought in the Falklands War. Now, all of these people have experienced some kind of trauma while at war. They were experiencing things like flashbacks to the original trauma, or they were having terrible problems sleeping or being... Another thing that people with PTSD often talk about is being hypervigilant. It means that they're always looking around, looking for threats in the environment, trying to see if there's anything out there trying to get them. So these are the kind of, you know, everyday struggles that people with PTSD are living with. The results that we were getting were really surprising. So we found really significant decreases in the symptoms of PTSD. So people were much less vigilant, people were much less anxious, and people were able to sleep much better.
swing it in slowly.
This breakthrough in PTSD treatment caught the attention of the film department at the University of Essex. Their documentary, called Lifted, follows the stories of the veterans as they battle through serious mental health issues to find joy in fishing.
Look how quiet, relaxed and composed everybody is. No issues at all.
That is textbook. That is just what the doctor ordered. Can't get that on the NHS, unfortunately.
Not only has this programme led to UK government support, but it's also sparked an international movement across Europe. How to use angling as therapy.
We're very excited about where it's going, mainly because, you know, we knew on an individual level how good this is for people, and then we've managed to prove that, as we think, scientifically, and showing that on a larger scale, and now we're rolling it out to many more people. And at the moment, it, you know, not only is it going to be available in Essex, but we are pushing that out around the country as far as we can. So we're working also some of the largest angling businesses in the country to try and roll this out to more people using other lakes around the UK, but then also obviously across into Europe as well when we get the chance.
We hope you've enjoyed Louder Than Words.
This episode was all about nature as therapy.
Join us next time when we're diving into inequality.
What's driving the widening gap between wealthy and poor?
And what can we do to solve it?
Thank you for listening. This was the Louder Than Words podcast from the Centre for Public and Policy Engagement at the University of Essex. You'll find links to the contributors and their work and books on the Centre's website.